Soapbox Radio.
Welcome back to Soapbox Radio, everybody. Today we are so happy to have author Neil Matheson joining us live in the studio. And Neil was the one who actually recommended we play that song by The Kinks. The Kinks, pardon me. And it was Take On Me.
That's right.
So that was so much fun. It brought back a lot of memories. So Neil is a first-time writer from Western Canada, currently residing in Surrey, British Columbia. And he was born on March... do you want me to tell your birthday, Neil? He was born in 1968. He entered the world with a physical disability called cerebral palsy. From that day forward, Neil experienced life on a pair of crutches and walked through life on a pair of bent legs. Despite his physical handicap, Neil grew up like any regular kid. And while not raised in a Christian home per se, Neil did manage to reach adulthood with at least some understanding of who God is. And now at 44 years of age, he reflects back on his life story through his book that he's written, which is called Daddy Bent Legs, The 40-Year-Old Musings of a Physically Disabled Man, Husband, and Father. So his book describes his journey on crutches, including struggle, triumph, acceptance, love, and salvation, all retold within the pages of his book. Welcome, Neil.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, we're so happy to have you. First of all, I did take the time to read your book during the week, and I couldn't keep my nose out of it. It was such a great book, and you're such a really wonderful writer. Can you share with us what inspired you to write your autobiography?
I first wrote it when I was 22. It was my last year of college. In the summer break, I figured I had a lot of time off, and I'd never written a book before. I've done a lot of writing before. I had a writing course in grade 12, and I really enjoy writing, but I'd never tried a serious project before, and I thought, well, I'll give it a shot. And the thing was is that I knew, because it was the first time writing, that I wanted to write about something that I knew about. And, of course, what better thing to write about than yourself? Because that's an easy, you should know yourself, right? So I thought it'd be kind of fun to write about myself. But also, too, the other thing I realize is it's a kind of a silly prospect a little bit to write an autobiography when you're 22. So it seems a little pompous or whatever. So I wanted to make sure I had fun with it. The main push of the book was it was humorous and fun, and also too that I'd never seen a book about disability that had a real fun and humorous side to it. I'd read a lot of serious books, and I wanted to make sure that I wrote a book that people know that, you know, having a disability isn't all bad, and it's, you know, it's not all filled with self-pity and dread, you know, that life can be happy and fun and humorous and that. So that was a big push for me to get that out there.
Can you share a little bit about your disability with the viewers? Because, of course, we're not on television, so they can't see us.
Yeah. I have cerebral palsy, and it basically just affects my legs. But it's called muscle tone. If you have bad tone in your body, it just means everything is tight. And I was born with it, and it basically, the majority of how it was caused was right at birth. There's something called anoxia, which is where the oxygen gets cut off in the womb or during delivery. The oxygen got cut off, and it just was enough to kill off a tiny part of my brain, which controls my motor ability in my legs and arms, but mostly in my legs.
And, yeah, so your childhood, it was unlike any other childhood that most people experience. You had painful surgeries on your feet and your legs, and then you had to wear braces on your legs. Can you? I know that you in your book, one of your chapters talks about how when you had recovered, we were recovering from a surgery and in GF Strong, mm-hmm. and you would play with puppets and puppet shows in the room with your roommate there. So, you know, talk about your that must have been very hard for you. Can you share a little bit of the stories about the surgeries you went to as a little guy?
Well, truthfully, I don't remember too much about the first one. Basically, what I share in the book, and it's just a tiny bit, was basically all I remember. And but I do know I had an operation in when I was 15. That was a pretty major one. And then, in fact, all the doctors they would bring in the doctors and a bunch of student doctors, and the doctor would say, "Oh, and this boy had a triple orthodontic," and everybody would go, "You know, I can't believe it," and, you know, which means that I had both my feet cut open and kind of fused, and also I had both of my hamstrings and both my legs done as well. And it's kind of unheard of to do all four operations all at once, and everybody was kind of shocked. But the thing that a lot of people have to realize, and I think anybody that's had a surgery would know, that is that every time you have a surgery, you and cast yourself, the recovery time is so long, and you always lose something. Every time you do a surgery, you always lose something in the recovery. So I just wanted to get it all done and over with, and then it would just be done in one fell swoop kind of thing. So.
And what did they hope to accomplish from the surgeries?
It was, I had my feet would roll over a lot on the arches, like on the inside. I would walk on my inside arches, and I just also had my legs kind of straightened because they were more bent, and they're more bent now because I'm older and you know, gravity takes over kind of thing too. But you know, that's life.
Yeah. So from an early age, you went to GF Strong, mm-hmm. and which was kind of like a hospital / school for disabled children or children with disabilities. And mm-hmm. then in grade two, you went to a, quote, normal, unquote, school. Can you tell us a little bit about the transition and how GF Strong compared to your new elementary school?
Well, that's the thing, is that I would have been about 7 or 8, I think, when I actually approached my parents, and I said, you know, I just feel weird going to GF Strong. It just didn't feel, because I would go there and I would be surrounded by everybody with wheelchairs and crutches, and there was a real dichotomy of, you know, us versus them. You know, it's like the normals versus the disabled, and it just didn't sit right with me, because I'd go home afterwards and then I'd play you know, games with all the neighborhood kids, and of course all the neighborhood kids were able-bodied, and that to me was normal when I got home. And of course my sister and my parents always treated me really normal all the time, and so it really, I don't know, the whole thing was really awkward. And so right from a very early age I picked up on that, and I remember telling my parents I really want to try a normal environment, and yeah, so I just kind of went from there.
And you found using humor really helped.
Yeah, that's always been my crutch, you know, pun intended, I guess. But yeah, I've always used humor for everything, and I find it helps. I know that again, when I wrote the book, I know that when you I think with when you use humor, you gain more credibility with people too. You know, if you can make somebody laugh, they're like, "Oh, that guy made me laugh. He's okay." You know, and then they're more willing to trust your opinion, kind of thing. So that was a big reason why I depended on that as well.
Oh wow! You know, so in your book too, you don't mention your parents very often, but when you do, they sound as though they treated you just as if you were able-bodied. And I love the chapter titled Cramped Cubicles. Would you be able to share that story with our listeners? Especially with the one with your mother walking down the aisle with loads of jeans and T-shirts for you to try on. But you had a little bit of, you know, there was struggles and even things to humps to get over in situations like that.
Yeah, that episode with my mom happened a lot, actually. but it was fun. But yeah, I mean, back in the day, I mean, I'm 44 now, and so going back, you know, 30, 35 years, you know, there's so many stores and movie theaters would have turnstiles, but all the clothing stores, they never had a bench or a chair. It was always you just stand up and you know, change that way. And nobody had the forethought to think, well, maybe there are going to be people with disabilities that are going to try on clothes. Yeah, when I would try and clothes and there would be no chair, I'd have to sit on the floor to try my clothes, right? And I put in the book that sometimes the privacy curtains didn't go all the way to the floor, so I'd be flopping around, in my underwear, putting on clothes, and anybody walking past would be able to see me. But
where's the privacy in that?
Yeah,
wow. So you ended up becoming some sort of an advocate at an early age,
yeah.
To try and see if you could get some change in making places more accessible to people with disabilities.
Yeah,
so much so that you even became the poster child for the Easter Seals campaign in the
1980s.
And here's the slogan, everybody, that they used back then: help Easter Seals, help crippled children.
Yeah. Yeah.
So share that. Can you share that story with us? I don't want to give too much away because we do want everybody to go out and get Neil's book and read it, but these are just some examples of the wonderful
stories.
At
least one copy. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. At least one.
Yeah, I've never been a fan of the word cripple, but back in the day, again, that was a very common term. I mean, everybody used it, but I always think of, I don't know, to cripple. I mean, just the sound of it is just, oh, that's just a horrible word. And I don't know. I had this poster of me it was fun to do, but then I realized after it was done, it was like I have this big slogan emblazoned above my head, and it's like, I'm supporting that word. It just seemed weird to me.
So you're the epitome of the crippled child, basically, is what it's saying to the world.
Yeah, and I put in the book, I make sure that people know that I had fun when I was doing it and everything like that. So there's that side of it too, but. But you realize at a very, because I was 12 years old at the time, and you realize that really I was just there, I was just a pretty face, and nobody really cared what kind of thoughts I had in my head. You know, like the letter I wrote was, like I was saying before about making sure that movie theaters and shopping malls didn't have the turnstiles, and you had the accessible change rooms and stuff like that. And I wrote a letter to city planners about that, and it was Easter Seals that picked up that letter, and they used it for a campaign because I also mentioned about horseback riding and the Easter Seals camps and that type of thing. So they picked up on the letter, but then really nothing of the city planning was done, so it was just, I just became this face and nothing else. I had nothing about what was in my head was actually translated into the campaign. So,
but I bet you sure were a cute little boy. If our listeners could see what Neil looks like, they'd all agree with us that he's very charming and he's very, beautiful, beautiful man, And as a child, I can just see that you're probably just really a great representation. Mm. And it was for a good cause.
Oh, yeah.
And,
for sure.
You were having your face there like that for 3 years.
I think it was 3 years.
That's amazing. Mm. And I'm sure that they probably raised a lot of money when people saw you on that poster, and they probably all wanted to help out.
It just seems, Neil, that... talking to you and hearing all these stories that you're saying, that you're basically on the cusp of change, because you saw as a child that GF Strong wasn't working, and that has now changed. GF Strong isn't at school now for a long time.
Yeah,
and you didn't like the word crippled.
No,
and you knew that was wrong.
Yeah.
So, and then also the turnstiles, the change tables.
Mm-hmm.
You wrote letters, so you really are an advocate.
Yeah,
and I'm sure you've made some changes.
Yeah, and I have to credit my parents for that too, because my parents instilled in me that kind of confidence too, because they really stood up for me and they said, because my mom was a nurse, she had kind of the medical knowledge, I guess, to stand up to doctors and point out if she thought that something was crap, because, again, back then, a lot of doctors believed that, you know, people with physical disabilities or mental disabilities would not amount to anything. The perception was, don't expect much from your son or from your daughter, you know. And it was always like, just don't expect anything from him, you know. And I know my mom was always like, that's crap, I don't believe that, mm-hmm. you know. And so, you know, I would see that and I would pick up on that, of course. And so I got that in me in a very early age. So that's,
and now you've moved forward and you've written a book, a beautiful book. And Carmen and I were reading some chapters, and we were crying because it's just very moving and very personal and really, really from the heart and soul. And I would really like it if you could share a little bit about moving on in your life and meeting the love of your life, because now you're a married man, you have a child, mm-hmm. you're living a regular life.
Yep, yep. I have a 4-year-old son now, and... I met my wife. Well, we met December 2001, so it's been a little over 10 years now, and we've been married almost 9. And yeah, that's really when my life really changed. And it's funny. There's a theme throughout my book of, you know, that. I know when I was younger that I really wanted to kind of leave my disability behind and really prove that I could go beyond my disability and just be normal, you know, quote unquote normal, and that I could just kind of sweep my disability aside. But as I've gotten older, and especially as I've met Ilana and become a father, you really start to embrace the disability more and realize that it's you know, that they can live in tandem with one another, that normal and disability don't have to be separated. You know, you can still live a normal life with a disability. So,
yeah. I found it very interesting when you were sharing with us about dating, mm-hmm. and how difficult it is for a young man that is like a teenager and wants to date girls, but he has a disability. Mm-hmm. And but then again, you did not want to date somebody that was disabled.
Either did my wife. We both are like that.
Oh, so that maybe that's maybe a feeling that everybody has then.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was very common, mm-hmm. because the thing is, as I said before, to lead off the show, that, I mean, you know, having a disability isn't always bad. I can live a happy life, but it's still a burden. It's still a challenge, and so. My attitude initially was, you know, I know it's hard to have a disability because I have one. I have one 24/7. And so the idea of taking somebody else's disability on as well, it's like that's two times the burden type of thing. So it's not, initially it didn't seem that it was a workable idea. And same thing with my wife too. She didn't want that either. And it's just one of those things that love happens despite everything. You know, I didn't want it. I didn't plan for it, but it happened anyway. And I realized that that God has the better plan. He understands kind of what we need. And so, you know, I went through 15 years of dating, and I only ever dated able-bodied women, and then all of a sudden I meet this other woman in a motorized wheelchair, and I think, oh no, this can't be right. But it was the one. So who am I to know?
And did it become like a double burden, or was that just a myth?
Total myth. It actually. One thing I kind of touch on in the book is with Ilana, I found that I could be more of a man, like 100%, the man. You know, I think before in my dating experiences, I was always kind of depending on the woman to sort of take on the man role, if that makes sense, sort of to be the physical support. I don't know if I'm making sense, but and that I would sort of be the more of the nurturing type, and I don't know. I just find that now that I'm that I'm married to Elena, I actually get to be, you know, the 100% man that I wanted to be, and it's cool that I can.
So she made you the man that you were.
Yeah, yeah. So it's neat. Yeah.
Would you like to share a little bit about Elena? Because we're intrigued.
This is only a half hour spot, right? We kind of met through a blind date. It's a good friend of mine. His sister, older sister, met Elena at a school. She was a parent at a school, and she just happened to be at a school that Elena was teaching at, and she was they were both in the lunchroom, and I think Elena mentioned something about her hair color or something, and they just started talking, and after talking for a bit, she said, "Oh, you remind me a lot about my brother's friend," and she said, "I think you guys should meet." And of course, Elena's first, she says, "Oh no, I don't want to do that," and she just kept pushing and pushing and pushing, and eventually got a phone number out of her. And I wasn't too keen about the whole thing when I found out that Elena had a disability but for whatever reason, I was just kind of at a weak moment, I guess, and I just thought, I'll just phone her up that night. And that night we ended up talking for 2 hours, and it kind of went from there. But you know, she's an amazing woman as well. She could have a whole book on her own, or a whole show on her own too. She's been a teacher for I don't know, about a dozen years or so. Very much more limited than I am. Her joints are fused, and she's in a motorized chair. But you know, very, very successful teacher, and of course a very good mother, and everything. Just a real inspiration for me, you know, myself even, you know. And so it's cool. And the other thing too is what's neat about our story is that I believe that we are the only, at least this is what we think anyway, that we're the only two disabled parents in all of BC, like a union of two disabled parents together.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's still the case, or was that just like 4 years ago?
I don't know. We tried to look up if we could find anybody else, but we're pretty sure that we might be the only ones.
Well, if there's anyone else out there like Neil, who's a married couple with disability, have a child,
please,
contact Neil on his Facebook page, Daddy Bent Legs.
DaddyBentLegs.com.
Yeah, or you can always contact us here at Soapbox Radio, and our email address is soapboxradio@hotmail.com, or we have a Facebook page too. You can just search Soapbox Radio. Now, one thing that I thought was really neat, Neil, was when you first saw Lana, you said that all you saw was her, and her wheelchair just melted away.
Mm-hmm.
Aww, that's so romantic.
Yeah.
She sounds like an absolutely lovely person, and you know what? We would just love to meet her one day and have her on our show as well. Mm-hmm. That would just be, if she has the time and she would like to come down here, we would really love to have that.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Time has gone by so quickly. We're just going to take a really quick station ID here. This is Vancouver Co-op Radio, 102.7 FM, CFRO, and we're going to take a quick music break. We'll be right back with more Soapbox Radio.
Soapbox Radio.
Welcome back to Soapbox Radio. I'm Carmen Leanna, and I'm joined here with Hazel Lorraine and our guest Neil Matheson, author of Daddy Bent Legs. So thank you. You know what? We have to wrap up the show. Unfortunately, this hour just flew by. But you know what? Everybody, please do go to www.daddybentlegs.com, and you can check out Neil Matheson, and he also has a blog as well that he writes, and you can read his blog. But most of all, I really encourage our listeners to please go out, get the book Daddy Bent Legs, if you want to have a really nice read and enjoyable read. Do that. And we were talking about Alana, his love of his life, and his beautiful wife, and we didn't get into their wonderful little guy, Jake. And but you know what? You're just going to have to go buy the book.
That's right. Yeah.
And you can read the best chapter of all, which is Neil's marriage proposal to Alana. It's so funny and very romantic too. So Neil, thank you so much for coming
out.
Thanks
for
get the book.
We really appreciate it. Yeah, if you could just let our listeners know where they can find your book.
Sure. It's available on amazon.com, amazon.ca, at Christian bookstores. House of James has it. They were one of the first bookstores to carry it, so thank you, House of James. I also have a whole stack of books in my own house that I can sign and hand deliver or mail off to people if they want it. They just have to contact me through the website.
Okay, well, that's fantastic. Yeah. Thank you so much.
And what was that website again?
It's daddybentlegs.com. And my email address is just Neil, N-E-I-L, at daddybentlegs.com. And if they want to get a book from me personally, they can get one that way.
Wonderful. Well, thanks again, Neil.
Yeah, thank you.
And when we come back next week, next time we're on Soapbox Radio, which is going to be July the 11th, we are going to be joined by Pastor David Hayward. And David has devoted his life to ministering to people with disabilities. He has a church right downtown here in Vancouver, and he's going to be coming on our show live. We're going to be talking about spirituality and religion and how it relates to people with disabilities. And we'll be asking Pastor Dave some of your questions as well. So if anyone has questions they'd like us to ask him live on the air, please send me a quick email to soapboxradio@hotmail.com. Thanks, everyone, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thank you.